Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
And the outstanding Mike DeCourcy joins us. Mike, how you been?
I am well, Steve. How are you?
Doing well. Thanks for asking. Appreciate it.
You bet.
Okay, so here we are. It's draft day. Did anybody keep their name in the draft that played college basketball last year that surprised you?
I think the one that probably surprised me the most was Chris Livingston from Kentucky, a player that I thought had first round, maybe even first half of the first round potential, but wasn't nearly developed to that point. Didn't shoot the basketball that well, didn't really find his rhythm as a college player, even as a contributing player to a winner till the second half of last year. I thought he could have come back this year and been terrific in 2023-24 and been, like I said, somewhere in the first round, maybe even top half of the first round. And I don't know what advice he's been getting. Look, Jordan Poole just got traded for Chris Paul. And Jordan Poole was a player that I thought would not be selected in the first round and that I knew had first-round talent. I was wrong. He barely squeezed into the first round, and it's worked out beautifully for him. So if Chris gets taken the first round tonight, I will announce that I'm wrong. I'm sorry. I got it wrong. But I don't think I'm going to be wrong.
No, I don't think you are either. And I was with you on Jordan Poole. I felt like, hey, NBA talent, but, geez, I didn't think he'd be a first-round pick. And he's made it all pay off, to his credit. Were you surprised that Shea Weigt didn't come back for one more?
No, I think that for Oscar, it was a question of, and he'd been in college for 4 years, and it was a question of when, more so than what he could add or whatever. And he'd already shown that he was the best college rebounder of the last 50 years, but the things that he doesn't do well, I don't know that he's going to learn them as fast, if at all. He's not going to learn them as fast in college as he would there, because the game that he'll ultimately have to play is the game that they're playing in the NBA and the G League, the 24-second game, the way they spread the court, the way they run pick and roll, all of that. You can approximate it in college, but he needs to learn it, and he needs to learn it pretty quickly if he's going to make a living there.
You and I both watched Jed Howard and Kobe Bufkin this year. And Bufkin is the guy that, at least on mock drafts, is the one that's rated higher. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think the reason that Kobe is rated higher is because he projects to play multiple positions. He can be a point guard in the NBA with some time. He's got the ball skill, and he certainly has the dynamism. And Jed is a little bit more stationary, doesn't have the ball skill as much. He's going to be a shooter at heart, and he's got to make shots. He can go past people, but he can't create in that sense. I mean, he can use his dynamism to get past somebody, but he doesn't break you down the way Kobe can. And I think that's the difference between those two players. Jed's got great positional size, though. I mean, if he buys in the way his dad did, back in 1994, if he buys in the way his dad did, he can be a significant NBA player. But it's going to take some work, and I'm not saying it's beyond him. I'm just saying that there's a lot of work for him to do between here and excellence in the NBA.
How do you look at Jalen Hood-Schifino?
Well, what I like about Jalen is that he has the ability to get by the initial defender and then play from 15 feet. And that's a unique – I shouldn't say unique. That's an uncommon skill. Most players, when they get by, they have to go deep to be dangerous. They have to go all the way to the rim if it's possible, or they have to go all the way to the middle of the lane and force that help there for them to be dangerous. He can play – significantly from 15 feet because he's so accurate from that spot. I mean, he's not Nikola Jokic in that situation. I've never seen anybody who shoots the ball like he does from 13, 14 feet. But when he gets there, he'll have the option in the NBA to kick out more than he did at Indiana. They didn't do a lot of off-ball action for no. They only had one shooter, and they didn't do enough off-ball action for him when Jalen got to that 15-foot spot. That's something the NBA will take significant advantage of, and I think it'll work for him. I do think he has a chance to be a very good NBA point guard.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think he does, too. He shows all the signs of it. How do you view the big man in the NBA, and how do you view the big man in college basketball, the way they are taught in college basketball, versus how they need to play in the NBA?
You know, I think it starts really with how they're taught prior to even high school. One of the advantages, especially with big players in Europe, is that they teach you the whole game,
right.
and they have the academies and the system to do that. And they don't do that here. You're big; they stick you by the bucket, say get the ball, put it back in, and that's a disadvantage for the American big guy. Secondarily, the disadvantage for the American big guy is what you might call it the James Wiseman quandary, which is when you're that size and you learn the full game and you have that much ability, everybody's has anointed you before you've done anything, and you get the idea, like James did, that you don't have to do anything.
That's
you don't
right.
need to work. You don't need to get better. You don't need to, when you get to the league, you don't have to work hard. James Wiseman should be one of the best players in the NBA right now. He's been certainly one of the best young players in the NBA, but he's not, because he never bought into the idea that you have to really work at it. That's the thing about people don't understand about LeBron and Kevin Durant and Chris Paul and guys like that. It's, look, I'm sure they have a lot of fun with all the money they make and all that, but they are absurd workers. The time they put in the gym to get great and stay great is phenomenal. And it's a difference between those players who make it who as stars and those who don't. James Wiseman has the ability to play at that level, to be because he can handle it, because he can shoot it from deep, because he's 7'1" and can play above the rim. But he's never bought into the fact that to be with those guys, to play against those guys in the biggest games, you have to be in the gym at the same time in July that they are.
Well, and I've said that for years. People don't realize that the best players I've seen are all coachable, which means they are figuring out ways to get better all the time. And that's what I think some people just think, you just roll the ball out and just go play. And I think some fans think you roll out the ball and go play. It's all the stuff that people don't see in the off season that makes them better and makes them great players.
Yeah, one year I was out at the big time tournament in Vegas, and I was at the gym where most of the games were, and there was a hole in the afternoon session. I think it was Green Valley High School, and Tim Gergerich, the former Pitt coach who became a great assistant to Tarkanian at UNLV, and then and then in the NBA for many years, and he was working out some guys, and I believe, if I remember correctly, Kevin Durant was one of them. And I'm just watching this, and I'm like, man, if I got that money, I'm not here. It's not, you know, yeah. I sort of understand the idea, but I also am huge admirer of those guys and Steph Curry and all those players, and how much they put in to maintaining the excellence that they attain. It's really astounding how much they put into it.
I've only seen highlight packages of Victor Wembanyama. That's what I have to work with. What do you know about him?
Well, you know, I do have a small advantage over that, in that I watched him play in the U, not in person. That's my disadvantage. But I watched him play in the U19 World Championships. I think he was probably 18 at the time. It was 2 years ago. He played against the United States in the gold medal game. They fouled him out of the game. He certainly was an impactful player, but they fouled him out. And there were a lot of times when Kenny Lofton Jr., 6'6", about 245, maybe more, Wasn't exactly a spelt guy, but has a lot of low post skill, and he really knew how to play against that kind of length and size because he just wore him out with his physicality.
Yeah.
I think it'll be interesting to see. I understand the appeal and the allure. I do retain the slight skepticism, and I may be, that may be blown away in his first NBA game.
Right, sure.
But he's so thin, and the incredible skill that he has for a 7'4" player that he has on the perimeter. I mean, he's remarkable ball handler, excellent shooter. Is it that valuable for a 7'4" guy? That's what I'm interested to see. The NBA has come a long way since the 80s when Ralph Sampson was a very similar player but much stronger. And he was a very, very good NBA player, maybe even for moments at a time a great NBA player.
Mm-hmm.
But he wasn't a superstar. He wasn't a transcendent player. He was certainly somebody that I'm sure that Houston was happy they took, other than the fact that he was often injured. But he didn't change the league in the way that everyone thought he would going in. And so I am interested to see what Wembanyama can do.
I think you've echoed pretty much what I've said about him. You can see there's great talent there. I just want to see how it translates on a day-in and day-out basis in the league and how the league adjusts to him and then whether he can adjust back.
Exactly.
How do you feel about... Look, college isn't for everybody, as we all know. I'm not so sure that those that run colleges would agree with that, but it isn't for everybody. How do you feel about the G League guys, like Scoot Henderson, the Thompson Twins, and so forth? And what do you think a move like that to play at G League Ignite, for example, can that help a player? What's your opinion on that?
Well, I think that first of all, there's a difference between the Ignite program that Scoot Henderson was in and some previous players have been in, and the Overtime Elite, which is what you see the Thompson brothers coming from. That's where they played. And so there's a little bit of a difference. I got a good chuckle at the Overtime Elite was described in a article that Seth Davis did, quoting a lot of anonymous NBA scouts in The Athletic, where one of them said that they thought that the Overtime Elite program was glorified AAU. I got a kind of chuckle out of that. The G League Ignite is not. I mean, the G League Ignite is you play against some real dudes who are very good players, and you're not playing in any games that matter ever, but you're playing against real competition. And it's hard. So if you're in that league, you don't play quite the same schedule or have quite the same obligations that a customary G League player does, and you're paid much better. But at the same time, you've got to be up for that competition, or you're going to get overwhelmed.
Right, and there's no question about it. And it's right. In G League Ignite, they play against, like you're right, dudes. I mean, without question. Have you seen Scoot Henderson at all?
Just in some of the television game that he played against the Wembanyama team. That was really the only exposure I had to him. Looks very dynamic. I've not been on the AAU circuit in a couple of years, so I did not see him at that level. So that was my one exposure to him. He certainly looked impressive. But there are people who've seen much more of him than I have.
In general, Mike, finally, how do you view the NBA draft? Because we all know how the NFL draft works. How do you view the NBA draft and the 58 picks that they're out there?
Well, I think it's interesting because whereas in the NFL, they're valuing the seventh pick in the round, the seventh round pick. They value that pick. They're going to do the best they can with it. There are times in the NBA where teams take players, European-based players, because they don't want another player. They're like, okay, we'll take this guy. Maybe he gets good and it'll be worth our while, but maybe he doesn't. That's okay because we didn't want to bring anybody in anyway. I think as rosters have expanded, that's been less true, but it's still not totally untrue. So I think that that's part of, you know, that's been part of the process. I'm a little frustrated. You know, I mentioned Chris Livingston before. Amari Bailey out at UCLA, kind of the same thing. I'm a little frustrated in that I thought that we would see fewer of these one-and-done players, that we would see fewer of them that go to college and don't become first-round picks and still go because they can get money in NIL. So I thought we'd see fewer of them, and maybe we have statistically, but they're still out there. I'd like to see none of them. I want them to be in the first round where they belong and where it's most lucrative for them. You go into the draft as a first-round talent, as a second-round pick, you may never make up that money that you lost by going through the side door.
Yeah, because it's going to be interesting. I want to see what happens. Now, Lundy's a four-year player. Pickett's a five-year player. They're done. Derek Lively from Belfont. All right.
He's going to be a first-round pick.
He's going to be a top 15 pick.
Yeah, absolutely.
When it's all said and done, and Kathy Drysdale was a former Lady Lion basketball player, works here at Penn State, so.
Right.
So I'm interested to see how he does. I remember watching him when he was a little kid. Like, hey, he can really play. It's like, great. Chalk up another guy that's better than me, and he's four. All right. Mike, thanks so much. Appreciate your time.
Thank you. Have a great day.